This podcast is brought to you by Cedar HR Solutions. Support our sponsors, Time Clockit and YourHIPAAtraining.com. Visit them on the web.
Hi, Doctor. Thanks for joining us for the podcast today. We're going to talk about practice transitioning, and I'll define that for you in a moment. My name is Paul Edwards. I'm a co-founder and CEO of Cedar HR Solutions, and I'm joined today by Kurt Tuller. Kurt?
Hi, Doctor.
So Kurt is one of our experts in our Solution Center. If you're not familiar with our model, we have a Solution Center where our members can call in and get all sorts of great information and help with issues that are ongoing. We get these questions about practice transitions all the time, right, Kurt?
Absolutely. A lot of doctors will come in actually just as they're about to transition, so they will be part of the startup.
Great. So let's define transition. Just based on my experience over the past several years, there's a few scenarios that we look at or we see. This is the doctor. First scenario is the doctor's going to purchase a practice. Everybody knows he's going to purchase the practice, and so all the information is kind of out there and up front. Employees know the practice is up for sale. There's another model, and it's more common than I ever thought it would be, which is it's almost a secret transition, whereby the thought process is that really no one knows that the practice is actually about to be sold, and the reason for that is because the selling doctor doesn't want the deal to fall through and word to get to his employees and out to the community that he sold when he actually hasn't sold. The next thing you know, his practice might be hurt by that in some way. And anything that hurts his practice at any point along that pathway towards selling, whether it's with, you know, whichever buyer ends up buying it, hurts the whole process. And believe it or not, I call it the ambush sale, which is the employees come in, Kurt, on Monday morning and are told, hey, I sold the practice. Now I'm going to be here for X amount of days or weeks or whatever for the transition, but hey, I'd like for you to meet your new boss.
And that's an awkward conversation.
It's an awkward conversation. But in any case, the things that we're about to talk about today will help you in any of these, under either of these circumstances.
Yeah, and good planning is the secret to making it work well.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing that I'd like for everyone to know is that once you become the employer, all of the obligations of being an employer immediately fall upon you. They don't wait, do they, Kurt?
No, not at all. And in fact, knowing that and going into it with an idea that from day one you have to act in that method and think in that way is really important to executing on the changeover well.
Yeah. Can you give an example of some of those obligations?
Well, the one that most people don't think of very often is that the owner doctor, the prior owner doctor, the selling doctor, is now often becoming an employee. And that is not a pair of shoes that he's worn recently in most cases. So
right.
You have to think about how that's going to work. You're also going to be essentially managing all of these people with whom you may have some relationship with.
Or you may not.
You may not. If in the case of an ambush sale, you may be meeting them for the first time in that meeting.
Mm-hmm. Or even if you've been an associate in the practice, all of a sudden, there's a big difference between being, you know, someone on the team and being someone who owns the team and the practice.
Yeah, and there's a big difference between being a dentist and being the dentist.
Yeah.
And between being an employee and the employer.
How about this? I get this a lot in the transition conversation. It's don't upset the apple cart. When you come in, regardless of the circumstances, ambush or not, traditional transition, everybody knows, you want to be careful about upsetting the apple cart because you're coming in and your relationship really depends on your employee's relationship to the patient. So the hygienist and all the employees, the thinking there is wow, really, you know, we don't want to upset someone because if they all walk out on me, it's a very official HR term, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that can happen. And I understand when people come in, you have to take a look at the situation. It's like buying a house, right? If you don't like the color of the paint, but the roof's leaking, you got to prioritize. But it's important to think about it and to decide beforehand, especially if you have a relationship with the employees, about who might the weak links be, who uh-huh. might be the people that, if they don't like it, are going to really create some problems.
Can I just go ahead and make the statement there are going to be weak links?
There almost always are.
You're probably not going to get along with someone, or they're not going to get along with you, or not see eye to eye.
Or even, and I think we get this probably most frequently, is that people are just resistant to change, even change that's better for them.
Right. There'll be a lot of questions from the employees, whether they're expressed or not. Do I get to keep my 4 weeks of paid vacation that I've been earning now that you're taking over the practice?
Yeah, and you're going to hear that tone where it switches down a few octaves because they're worried. And people, when they're concerned, get scared, and they react very emotionally to things. And they react in ways that they feel like they can. So they don't tell you that they're concerned about their compensation or their job. They complain about the small changes about how they're going to enter their charting.
Right. So I would say one of the first notes you want to make is make sure that you figure out everything that you can about the employees. First thing I like to say is ask for their file. And if you're just handed an incomplete file with an application in it from 1974, you can pretty much count on that's what the HR situation is going to look like in this practice.
Yeah, that'll give you a good overview.
Yeah.
You know, check to make sure that their records are in place. Do they have I-9s on everybody? Meaning, do they know who these people are and that they're eligible to work in the U.S.? You know, have they given any discipline to anybody in the practice? If you see an empty file, that doesn't mean it's a good employee. It means it's an empty file.
It means it's an empty file. That's a very good point. I like that. So, you know, questions about, are we going to get paid holidays? Are we going to get, I've been here for 15 years. Am I still going to get all this paid time off that I've been earning and accruing? Of course, a new doctor's looking at all of his bills and his loans and his payments and buying the practice and everything. The last thing, I mean, that you want to hear is I've got four long-term employees that are earning a month's worth of vacation time. And by the way, they all think they're about to take it now. It's like, well, I didn't take my vacation yet, which leads me to something else. In your buy-sell agreement, make sure that the selling doctor buys out all of this stuff from the employees. Make it a condition that he takes care of this stuff as he or she is going out the door.
And make it very clear that the transition involves the assets of the practice, but does not guarantee employment to any of the employees. That they are essentially being terminated from their old position and have the option or ability to apply to be hired by the new practice.
Ooh, that sounds hard. And in a very literal sense, that's exactly what's going on. Like we said in the beginning, you're taking on this new obligation, and it switches to you just automatically whether you want it or not. No matter how nice you are, how informal this may feel to you, that's how it's going. So let's look at here's the thing that I always say to folks. Whether you just don't want to upset the apple cart, you're going to kind of leave everything in place, or whether or not you're going to make big changes, you might even bring your own office manager into this practice, whatever. The one thing that you can do is make sure that you put yourself as the employer in the best possible position. And, you know, and I hate to sound like a broken record, but the answer to this is putting in your own employee handbook.
Yes. And I really like the call that the doctor gives me that's 6 months out from the sale.
Yeah.
And he says, what do I need to do? Because I can help him a lot. Now, I can help the person who's 6 weeks in after the sale, sure, but I much prefer to prepare, because that gives us not only an opportunity to put a good handbook in, but a good handbook that has some thought out practices, that has taken into account the old handbook, because you do have to do that. You have to, if they have employees that have 4 or 5 weeks of vacation, and that's something that'll happen in a practice that's 30 years old, you want to make sure that you're taking that into account. Do employees continue on? Do they get grandfathered in with that amount of vacation or compensation? And that, you really need to run your own financials, right? You will have a different profitability in this practice versus the old doctor. You're going to have different amounts of loans, and you need to see if you can afford to do that. And if you can't, don't promise what you can't.
Yeah, I want to focus on that old handbook. You know, you're going to hear everything you need's here. It's all here. It's all here. I mean, sure, you're going to want to add your own touches to it, and you might want to paint and spruce the place up and buy a few pieces of new equipment. But everything you need's here, including your handbook. I put this thing together 20 years ago, and it's served me well, and I've never gotten any trouble with it. And I'm going to pass that along to you too. If you're the purchasing doctor, does that send up any red flags for you?
Because I've gone used car shopping, yes.
Yes.
Because they're essentially selling you something that They want you to think has value.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make it have value. And the real problem is if that person hasn't kept it current or it wasn't good to begin with. Even a good handbook can go bad very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Can we said there were going to be weak people, weaknesses on the team, people who might not make the cut. Can we also assume there's going to be upsets?
For sure. And there's going to be people who want to fight the change that happens. There's going to be people that...
Fight the power.
Yeah. I mean, there's a new sheriff in town.
Yeah.
And even if the laws are better, that doesn't make them acceptable to some people. And identifying who those people are and beginning from the get-go to address their concerns with explanations and their rebellions with necessary corrective action is important. You don't want to... seems selective in that. Start from the beginning, start right, and begin to apply the disciplinary measures that are necessary.
So as upsets occur, you're going to need tools to be able to address them. And to have some HR knowledge that a lot of people don't have as they're taking over businesses, never mind whether it's a medical practice, a dental practice, or you know what it is. All of us as business owners, we get our businesses, and I look back at my first 10 years when I used to own a different kind of business, and I think about what I didn't know about HR, and you could not fit it in this building, the things I did not know, and the mistakes I made along the way. And that's okay. That's a process. But in this conversation, what we're saying is that you really can't empower yourself if you've got a really good handbook in place. It's the one message you can send without upsetting the apple cart too much, that there's kind of a new sheriff in town and that these are the ways that we're going to do things. We're in compliance. This is something I care about. And in fact, when you look at a well-written handbook, the employee should also be able to see that you care about them.
Yeah. And I think showing up with that handbook is really important. It's the difference between the repair person who shows up at your office or your home and they have all the tools and they just fix the problem versus the person says, hey, I got to call somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You immediately think a different thing about the level of professionalism of that person. That's the same thing here. We can airdrop the tools for you to address the disciplinary concerns at your office to you by you giving us a call and us telling you how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd rather you have the handbook. You open it up, you find the solution, boom, you're right in there. You're solving the problem.
And you're empowered to solve the problems that aren't even corrective actions. Like, okay, I'm going to allow for you to continue to earn the amount of paid vacation that you were earning before, but I also am empowering myself to make a different decision around that a day from now, a week from now, or 8 weeks from now, or a year from now.
Yeah, the way that you conceptualize the policies at your practice are going to change from, you know, start date minus 3 months to first day to 6 months in.
Yeah.
And you want to be able to change those as mm-hmm. you need to.
Yeah. You can also start with a little bit of a clean slate, doctor. I just want to emphasize that. It's okay to come through the door and say, I am going to create some paid time off policies here and ways that you can earn and accrue that, but I'm not quite sure what they are right now. My promise to you is that my plan is within 90 days, I will amend the handbook and we will address paid time off. Now, that might not be the right approach for that team. That team might rebel right straight out of that. And the next thing you know, you've got a problem in hand. So every single transition has its own unique issues. And you're going to have to deal with them. And having a set of, 30, 40 policies in there that protect you and the practice and put you in the best position of knowledge and understanding of HR rules is probably going to be the place that you're going to want to launch from.
And allows you to feel confidence when you sit down with your new employees
mm-hmm.
and begin to get to know them and know what their valuable things are. What is important to them? A lot of people, it's going to be PTO. For some people, it's going to be work schedule. For some people, it's going to be, you know, where am I going to be in 2 years,
mm-hmm.
right? My future has been upset by this change or could be upset by this change. And I'm concerned. And the ability to sit down and say, hey, here's my plan. And the ability to say, here's my plan. If you don't want in, that's okay.
If you do want in, that's good too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is what we're looking for. And so, some of the things that you just have to do anyway. I mean, these are things that you can't put off. Or I guess you can. If you don't do them, you can get yourself in quite a bit of trouble. You need I-9s. You need your W-2s.
For everybody.
Probably be a good idea, especially if it's required by law in your state. Many states do require this, to give them an offer letter. You want to make sure it's a proper offer letter. because you can create a contract out of this very simple offer letter that you write yourself. So just make sure that you don't create a contract in that offer letter. And that's something else too. The handbook, when properly written and put in place, signed and acknowledged by everybody, is a reset. And what it does is it wipes out all other understandings, all other previous policies, all other misunderstandings that could come up. You're now putting your office in a complete reset. Again, it's done by policy and it's inside the handbook.
And it allows the employees to ask questions. It empowers them to come forward and say, hey, yeah, I don't understand this, or how is this going to work? Which starts a conversation before the emergency happens, because having a conversation post-emergency is dangerous.
So let's talk about that. You hand out the handbook. Do you pay them to read it?
Absolutely.
So you pay them to read it. This is something that they're doing for work. You get them to acknowledge it. You're asking them to please sign and acknowledge it. I like to give them a day by. If I take over on Monday, here's the book. Hey, everybody, we're going to take off early today. The office will be closed at 2:30. Please, everybody, stay over for an hour or so. Please read the book. You can take your copy home with you and finish it. Bring it back if you have any questions. Kurt, they band together overnight, and they read the book, and they're like, look at this. This is not right. I don't agree with this. And they all come in the door, and they all have a problem. And they've kind of got together as a group, because they are a group, and you're new. How do you address this gang that have come through the door, and they're ready? It's the airing of the grievances. It's Festivus.
Well, it's simple military strategy: divide and conquer. You want to separate them out.
Okay, so don't take them on as a team. Don't stand there and try and solve this as a team. Individually, each individual person's issue needs to be addressed in a private way.
Yeah, because understand what that looks like, right?
Yeah.
It's you against them,
yeah,
which is exactly the situation you don't want to have.
Right.
What you want to have is a collaborative understanding, but you can't in that mob mentality. So
right,
you have to create the individual. You do that by dealing with the individual.
So I hear all of you, and I understand, and I knew there were going to be some questions, but here's what I want to do. And this is how it's going to be between us. I'd like to meet with you each individually. And mm-hmm, I'd like to do it as soon as possible. So let's schedule 15 to 20 minutes on my calendar. Let's start this afternoon. And let's pick you and you. And then tomorrow we'll do you, you, and you. And then let's meet and let's talk about this. And if you've got any issues, we can talk about it during that time.
And realize that although you're in this to do, to practice medicine, often, you know, with what we deal with, you don't get to do that right away.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's going to be a key part of your business, but this part is really important. And if you deal with it early, you can fix the problems that will create huge issues later on if you just leave them be.
And gain the benefits.
Yeah. Because a solid team will make you many, many times the amount of time, money that you invest in them now.
Yeah. And my rule has always been, if somebody's really looks like they're going to be causing a problem and causing a lot of kickback, no matter how valuable they are, call them out. You get them off the team. I don't care if they've been with you for 20 years or if they've been with you 2 hours. That's been my rule. Is that still a good rule of thumb?
Yeah, because no one is as valuable as they seem to themselves. That includes
what?
That includes me as well.
Yeah.
And we have to recognize that, and that a business can continue without any one individual. If a business has been set up to only be able to function under that, it's not a good business.
Right. So it sounds to me what you're saying is follow the normal hiring procedure.
Exactly. You want to start right there. And you're going to be hiring other people. You're possibly going to be firing some people. You want to start those right hiring procedures there as you hire, because that's what you're doing, these employees.
Kurt, let's talk about at-will employment. I hear this all the time. You don't have to worry about any of this stuff that these experts are saying. You're in an at-will state, and you can fire anybody at any time. So you just go in there, and if anybody's giving you a problem, you just fire them. Would that apply? I don't know. Let's see. I got 11 employees. 8 of them are white. 1 of them's black. 2 of them are pregnant. Can I call out anybody on that team? I'm new.
And this is what I say to people is, absolutely, you can. You can also juggle knives, but I'm not responsible for what happens after that.
Right.
Right? So just because you are an at-will state, and most states are, doesn't mean that you can do it with impunity. There are consequences, and those consequences get much more likely and much more expensive when you deal with people who are in a protected class or who have committed a protected activity.
Right. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So next thing is let's just say things go pretty smooth. So we came in. We came in with our forms. We did our obligation as an employer because we've got a new EIN number from the state, from the feds, and it usually transcends to your state number as well. But you can get a state one if you need a state one. They're going to be on our payroll. We've handed out the I-9s. We've followed the procedure. We're not going to get into that today. We've done the W-2s because we have to turn the W-2s in with our information on it so that the, you know, so the government knows who to come after when we, you know, need to pay the taxes and stuff. We put our handbook together. The transition went relatively smooth. We did lose one or two people, but everybody else is hanging on, and they seem to be doing pretty well. Let's say it's 2 months later, you finally, as the doctor, poked your head up, and you realize you have a couple of people that you really need to replace. It's time. It's just time to make some changes on the team. Things have settled down a little bit. What do I do?
Well, the first step is going to be to assess your risk. And that begins with some real simple evaluations. Does the person fall that you want to terminate or people fall into a protected class? And we're, you know, fairly familiar with this. It's going to be things like race, ethnicity, pregnancy, disability. If they do, it becomes not impossible, but more risky. You also want to see if they've complained recently about some form of harassment, if they've suffered an injury recently, the kind of things that would make a firing more risky.
If you're in California and you purchased your practice and it's after July 1st of 2015 when you're listening to this, if the person has recently, in the last 30 days, asked for or used paid sick time.
Yeah, or complained about the policy itself. Yeah. None of these make someone 100% protected. It's
right.
Not that you can't fire them, but it becomes more risky. So you want to do that risk assessment. How much are they harming the practice? How risky would it be? Mm-hmm. An important part of that risk assessment is looking through their employee file. If it is nothing but that W-2 and the I-9 information.
And no employee handbook.
And no employee handbook. Mm-hmm. Or even just an empty file. It gets riskier. Because what it looks like is that you are making a termination possibly for no reason, which is still valid, but riskier. So what we'd prefer to see is an employee file that has some write-ups in it, some corrective actions, where you've taken the employee aside and said, hey, A, B, and C are not a good idea. Mm-hmm. It's causing the team to be angry at you. It's decreasing productivity. It's making our customers angry. We need you to do X, Y, and Z instead, and we need you to do it in 2 weeks. 2 weeks go by. You do another write-up. They still haven't done it. No, we're serious. You really need to do this. 2 weeks go by. Now the termination becomes much safer because it's much easier for an outsider to draw the lines connecting why this person has been terminated.
You know, in the real world, typically when a doctor's owned a practice for 20, 25, 30, 40 years, solo, and he sells, he's tired. And over those last 5 or 10 years, things become a little bit relaxed. And people get to do things they probably wouldn't have gotten to do 15 or 20 years ago. And there's just there's not a system of accountability there. And so when someone new comes in and creates a system of accountability, which is what you're talking about, Kurt, you're saying, look, from here out, it's not okay to call in last minute and take the day off because it has an impact. There's an impact on the practice and on the patients. And we need a self-correction from you. We need you to show up. You know, you're beginning to frame things in a system of accountability, and you're going to get pushback when you do that. But the handbook carries you backwards.
Absolutely. And it's a core piece to anyone, core protection to anyone suing you, because the first thing that plaintiff's counsel is going to look for is the employee handbook, because he knows that can be a gold mine of opportunity to raise additional claims. And the more claims you can put in, the more value the lawsuit, the higher the settlement.
Right. As we wrap this up, we're talking about transitions, some of the pitfalls that you can fall into. Obviously, we've talked a lot about employee handbooks and getting them in place as a way to create accountability with your team. The next thing, or the last thing that I really want to look at here, is what do you do about replacing the people that you have to replace? So aren't we still in a continuous hiring conversation? Doesn't that begin the moment we come through the door and there's like more to do?
Absolutely.
Like hiring?
Yeah, and you want to think of yourself as always hiring. Now, you may not always be bringing someone on, but you're always in the process of finding quality people. Mm-hmm. And because you find someone who's quality, you don't have space for them, well, you don't have space for them right now,
right?
If you expand, if you lose somebody, if someone becomes pregnant and needs a break, you know, you need to have a almost like a Rolodex or maybe an iPhone now full of contacts that you can call up and say, hey, do you want a job? I'll pay more than what you got now, or pull in the talent.
So all people who come through the door, Kurt and I will agree on this. There's background checks and reference checks done on all those people.
Yeah.
But Kurt and I don't necessarily agree, nor do we disagree on whether or not you should do that to the existing employees. And I said, hey, you know, when Kurt put it in our notes, I was like, Kurt, from a practical standpoint, I've been working at the practice for 15 years. You know, I'm a nurse practitioner there, or I'm a hygienist there, or I've been working the, you know, billing or whatever it is. And you come through as the new guy and ask me to fill out a background check and go through that and ask me to fill out an application. And my thought is like, well, why don't I just do that in several other places too and see if I can just find a better job? Because that's kind of insulting. Kurt, you made a different point.
Well, first, let me say that I'm a lawyer, so I'm always looking for something to go wrong.
Yeah.
But that being said, remember that, you know, these people at the practice have likely become the family of the selling doctor.
Yeah.
And he is probably not dug too deeply into what's happened since he hired them, if he even did a background checks then.
Yeah.
So they could have very easily gotten into some sort of criminal or other altercation during that time period that would be useful for you to know. If your office manager passed some bad checks and had some issues, you know, 5 years ago, that's pertinent information if she's going to be handling your money.
So my advice is if you do a background check, you background check everybody. Just do the whole team and say it's just my team over at Cedar or my lawyer or my advisor in this just said this is something I have to do. Don't blame me. Blame them.
I tell our members all the time to say, put the hate on me.
Yeah.
I can take it. I want you guys to be protected. And that's our first goal. And, you know, going forward, you're going to be doing background checks for a lot of people. And they'll see that that's just the policy. It's not about them.
So can we take the don't upset the apple cart approach and still do some of these things the right way?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just because you don't upset the apple cart doesn't mean you can't move some of the fruit around.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can do some arranging, come through with a handbook, make sure they fill out the forms. You just let them know there's a structure and some accountability there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you may not come out swinging, or you may. You may need to.
And it really depends on the employees that you have and where the practice is.
And you're likely going to have some great employees there.
Yeah.
Seriously. And it's your job to figure out who they are and to support them and keep them in place and provide them the support they need in order to support you as you go through the transition. So it really is a lot about them.
Absolutely.
But not in a hostage situation.
you never want to negotiate from that area.
You don't want to negotiate from there. So, Kurt, thanks, man. I hope it's been helpful, everybody. We've kind of talked about this subject. We've gone around and around in circles because it is unique each and every time a practice gets purchased and sold. There can be 3 employees there. There can be 100 employees there. There's all kinds of circumstances. There's never just one rule that applies. But I hope this gives you all some thought. Some thoughts and some ideas about how you might approach this and some of the things that are just absolutely necessary. Kurt, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Today's podcast was sponsored by YourHIPAAtraining.com, a cloud-based, on-demand HIPAA training and compliance system for your employees and your office. Visit YourHIPAAtraining.com.